There's a couple of things I always keep in mind when working on any process, and especially in adoption. Like, one, start from the data, look at your current retention and what influences it. Second, keep it simple. We've tried very complex things, but the simple things typically work better. And then finally, if something works, continue to improve it, build further on it. You can only make it grow and make it better.
Hello and welcome everyone to the Retention Rethink podcast. This is a new mini series brought to you by the Customer Success Collective and Gainsight. I'm your host, Courtney Hauser, VP of Go-to-Market Transformation at Gainsight. This series is all about rethinking customer retention, not just preventing churn, but building life cycles that grow and deepen engagement. And today's episode is all about adoption, turning first value into momentum. We are focusing on one of the most critical phases in the customer journey, helping customers achieve their very first win, and then using that as a catapult into lasting adoption. I'm joined by someone who knows this challenge inside and out, Jeff Van Laer, CS Ops Manager at Trendminer. Jeff, welcome to the show. We're so glad that you're here. Why don't we get started while you tell us a little bit about Trendminer itself as a company, the types of customers that you have, and yourself and the role in the organization.
Yeah, of course. Thank you for inviting me, by the way. I'm very happy to be here. Talking about Trendminer, Trendminer is an industrial analytics platform. So what we do is we help engineers, operators, managers, so basically everyone in industrial manufacturing companies make data-driven decisions, better decisions, faster decisions. So typically our customers are small to large manufacturing companies from different industries like chemicals, oil and gas, energy, food and beverage, discrete manufacturing, any production facility you can imagine uses Trendminer. So my role as a customer success operations manager is supporting our customer success team in doing the best job they can. So making sure that our customers are successful by setting up internal processes, internal systems, and doing data analyses based on all the data we have available to make sure that we can focus on what's important and be as scalable as possible.
Awesome. I mean, we love CS Ops accelerants. So let's start at the beginning and talk a little bit more about the power of first value. So at Trendminer, that first aha moment, what is that magical instant when a customer first realizes value?
Yeah, that was actually one of the first questions I dove into when I started as CS Ops manager, looking at all our adoption data and trying to figure out like, hey, from all the users that we have, the ones that stay for a long time, why do they stay? What happens when they start using Trendminer that makes them stick? So we started looking at retention data, at which percentage of our customers is still around after 30 days, after 180 days. And we tried to correlate that fact with other data. So what we figured out is that those people who logged in on three different days early on had a much higher retention chance at the end. So after 30 days, we still had 90% of those users in our platform. After half a year, still even 80% of them stuck around, which is really large if you consider that people change roles and so on. So being very active early on is important. And then I started looking into, okay, what does that mean? Then what functionalities in the platform do those people who stick around, who are retained, what do they actually use functionality-wise? And we found a very high correlation between our searches and our monitors and retention. So it was very clear that the people who early on started using those functionalities, they searched through their data to find specific periods, then set up a monitor to be alerted whenever that behavior happened again, that those people stuck around for a very long time, started using Trendminer more often very early on, and that repeat use very early on was actually a very strong predictor of value and retention.
I love that. I love that you've actually quantified that first moment and got to that, like, three logins is equaling higher retention, as well as then the behavior that probably helps contribute to why they're logging in so frequently, right? If they're getting value from those searches and monitors. So you've done a lot, I think, in terms of data analysis. So how did you adjust or simplify your onboarding experience at TrendMiner to help guide those customers towards these things that drive that higher retention and adoption?
Yeah, of course, it's one thing to know what to focus on, but then you really need to nudge your users to that kind of behavior. So what we started doing like 5 years ago is try to build an in-application workflow that drives people to those searches and those monitors. So the first time we did that, we came up with a 16-step workflow where they had to add a tag, do a search, save a view, add another tag, and so on. And in the end, they set up a monitor. But it turned out not to be very effective, because what you will see with these in-app workflows is that after every step, you will lose a couple of people. So in the end, when you come to step number 16, in this case, we still had about 10% of users left. So that didn't really work out. So what we started doing then afterwards, when we saw that, is really reducing it. So now we have a whole new in-app onboarding flow, 7 steps, only really focusing on the key actions. Add that tag, do that search, set up the monitor, and you're there. And that works well. So now we get at least 50% of our initial users to that last step. But that's only one thing, because, okay, that's how you get users to experience maybe a first kind of value. They set up that monitor that maybe brings them back, but it doesn't provide them the context about what is TrendMiner really, what else can I do, how do I embed this in my daily work. So once they have gone through that initial flow, they become part of our larger onboarding program. And then we start combining that in-app flow with an email program where they get that context. So the first email will focus on what is TrendMiner, what's in it for you, to also make sure that they understand why they should continue using it, and then builds on that first workflow of searches and monitors. And then in the next few weeks, they go on to setting up dashboards, and they get an invitation to our basic guides webinar, which we also completely revised over the last year. So instead of focusing on functionalities, features, we now focus on real practical workflows, on how they can actually get a job done that they need to do on a regular basis. And that proves to work really well. We get a lot of good feedback, and we see that people in those trainings also have longer retention and then better adoption in general.
If you work in CS Ops, digital CS, customer education, or community, you know the chaos. Overlapping roles, unclear ownership, and the constant prove your value drumbeat by doing more with less. That's why teams are leaning into digital CS, combining human touch with digital programs that scale adoption, retention, and impact. Inside that motion, tools like Gainsight PX play a key role, giving you visibility into what users are actually doing in product and the ability to trigger timely, personalized guidance when it matters most. It's how digital, education, and CS finally work in sync instead of in silos. And what I'm about to share is linked in the show notes, so it's easy for you to grab. It's the Re-Architecting Digital Experience Teams Workbook, your hands-on guide to mapping what your team really does, connecting it to business outcomes, and telling that story with clarity and confidence. You'll find it waiting at gainsight.com/rethink or right there in the show notes. With Gainsight, you can finally treat every customer like your best customer.
I love that. I feel like whenever I speak to customers about, like, creating, you know, in end user journeys, especially initial end user journeys, to get that time to first value, our initial inclination is to over-engineer it, right? So you started there, cut it back to something really, really succinct in order to get a user towards that first value and drive that initial adoption, and then are building on in terms of, like, how to personalize that and really supplement with those use case development. to me, it sounds like you've kind of found that right balance between like automation and then that like more human connection once they reach that initial value. So how did you decide like which parts of the onboarding should be automated versus, you know, staying more like high touch?
Yeah, it's a bit the difference between the user journey and the customer journey. While we may have a couple of hundred customers, we have thousands of users. So on the user level, it's really hard to do everything high touch and have them in a meeting. So for them, we have the in-app journeys, we have our community, we have our monthly webinars where we can serve a lot of people at the same time. And when we come to the customers, there we will provide a more higher touch onboarding. Every customer gets an initial CSM or onboarding manager appointed, and they will get a CS engineer or a data analytics engineer that works with them with a couple of key users, a selected set, to prove the first value as well. So there we really work on their cases with their data so that we're sure that they experience the value firsthand and have their success stories to drive adoption further as well.
Such an important designation between the user journey and the customer journey. I love it. So, I feel like many teams struggle to really help customers feel that progress without like really burying them in the long onboarding type of checklist. So how do you help customers like feel like they're making progress without overwhelm?
Yeah. So this is really part of the job of our CSM. So they work with our customers to talk about what are your goals with TrendMiner? Where do you want to go? What do you want to achieve? And to translate that in an actionable success plan. But then again, a success plan, if you don't do it right, it might still be just a long list of checkpoints to check. So it's really important there to look at not what is your long-term goal, not to look at where do you want to be in 2 years only, but to really break it up into milestones that are tangible and that you can reach in a shorter term as well. So instead of looking at like that overarching long-term goal the whole time, we really try to focus on the shorter term milestones to finally get there. And that way we can really show customers in every meeting like, hey, we've made progress on the success plan. We have checked milestone one, milestone two, and that way they really feel motivated to progress further.
Now that motivation is so important. Let's flip the script a little bit and talk about the other side when adoption doesn't go as planned.
Yep.
So what signals in your data have been like the clearest early warning signs that a customer or user might be at risk?
Yeah, we're an analytics company. So obviously we have looked into that as well. And we've looked at, okay, what are good predictors of risk, of finally maybe even churn in our adoption data. And there's a couple that really stood out. The first one is an obvious one, I think, to everyone. When a customer has far fewer active users than the number of seats they purchased in their contract, that's a red flag. That's something to immediately follow up upon. But that's not the only one. We also need to look at trends. So we're tracking both monthly and quarterly active users to look at how that goes. It's important to also look at quarterly users because in the monthly active users, we very often see the effect of holidays. Over the summer period, we see declines. Over Christmas, it's huge. It almost drops to zero at most customers. So that's why we combine both monthly and quarterly active usage trends to look at how things are going. And then finally, it's about the breadth of adoption. So are users actually using the whole breadth of TrendMiner? What we sometimes see is that customers stick to the very basic features and they keep on saying, hey, we're really happy with this because we get access to our data very fast. We can visualize it very fast. But in the end, that's typically not enough. There's other tools that can do that. So we really need to make sure that they use the more advanced functionality to do root cause analysis, to search and monitor on their data, to build dashboards, to make sure that they experience the full value of TrendMiner.
In your in-app guides for adoption, do you have any things that have really worked best in terms of after that initial value to continue to support users on their journey, or maybe even something that didn't work very well?
Yeah, we've experimented a lot. So we've tried again, long flows to more advanced functionality and so on. But what we noticed is these very long workflows, they don't tend to work. People come into Trendminer with an objective. They want to get some piece of work done, so they don't want to be dragged into some other workflow or whatever. So what is really important is that the in-app engagements that we send to them, that they are short and that they come at a time where they really make sense. So maybe something as an example, something that worked really well is when we try to gather some feedback from our users on the scanner plot, some specific functionality. Yeah, we could have sent them a survey when they logged in, but instead we decided to only send it to those users who had actually used that scatter plot a couple of times before, and not at login, but right at the time where they started using it. So that they were with their minds with that scatter plot, and that they were open to giving us feedback on how to further improve it. And that turned out to be a really good choice because 80% of the users that we targeted actually responded to that survey, which is huge compared to other surveys we do.
Yeah, no, that's a great survey response rate. And timing is so important. Like you said, you don't want to be disruptive. You certainly want to be supportive in terms of your in-app applications. Have you ever experimented at all with gamification? And has any of your experimentation there helped with adoption?
Yeah, gamification is a bit tricky because it's something that we know that it works. We've seen ourselves being very motivated by us when we became members of communities or at the Pulse conferences of Gainsight, for example. There's always quite some gamification to get you more engaged, and that it really works well. We also see it in our own community. Like we have users who are really engaging a lot to try to get to the top of the leaderboard. So things like leaderboards or also progress bars, referring back to the success plans to show people they're moving forward, they work. So we also try to get that subtly into our in-app engagements, a small progress bar at the end, like a congratulations when people finish a step and so on. But we have to be very careful with it because we've seen our enterprise customers complain about it as well if we try to overdo it, giving feedback like, hey, this needs to be a professional software. We don't want this to be a social media platform, for example. So it's always like finding a good balance between using those tactics and staying professional in the minds of our customers.
Absolutely. You said it well. It's definitely a delicate balance, but very interesting in what you've been able to accomplish there and how you've experimented with it. When we talk about tying adoption to business impact, executives are always asking, like, what is the business outcome? So how are you making that connection between adoption and measurable results?
Yeah, that's the million-dollar question, I think. We've asked that a lot ourselves as well. But very recently, we actually started to make progress there as well. Maybe if you think back about the purpose of Trendminer, it's to help people make data-driven decisions faster. So a lot of the value is actually in the time our customers or the engineers save. And that's what we've heard over the last years a lot when we talked about value with our customers, say, yeah, we're saving a lot of time in doing analyses, and because of that, we can do more analyses, get more value, and so on. So I think that the real starting point for us was to be able to tie using Trendminer to time savings and then time sa savings to euros or dollars. So that's what we did. So based on the feedback we got from customers, like how many times they were saving, we came up with a formula that converts the number of logins of their users over a quarter to time saved. And then based on salary benchmarks for engineers, we can actually translate this to euros or dollars saved. We kept it very conservative. We didn't want to go to a customer and say like, hey, this quarter you have saved $3 million in time savings. They wouldn't believe us and they would just shut down the door or whatever. So we kept it very conservative, and we come up with a number, and it actually sparks a lot of interesting conversations. They might agree, they might not agree, but they also start thinking about, oh, wow, if we're already saving this much in time savings, we still need to add the actual outcomes of these analyses when we improve our process to get more yields or to get better quality. That's an extra saving. So it's really like a nice opener of a conversation on value that helps us to really get into that conversation with customers, which is not always easy.
And you mentioned being in conversation. Is that your primary delivery mechanism for showcasing the value and euros saved? Is it usually a conversation in a QBR setting? Or are you surfacing these value metrics up in app at all?
Yeah, at the moment, it's still a conversation. So we're still really fine tuning it all. We're also looking at, can we tie more value to the actual number of monitors they set up, the number of dashboards they created, those kinds of things. But at the same time, we're working on getting that into another format. So we're looking into some kind of digital quarterly business review where we can actually surface that information into a nice slide deck or a video that we can send also to our digital customers who don't have that meme conversation.
Right, right, right. Yeah, no, always. I feel like the trend is certainly trying to get more towards self-service value realization, but obviously in your higher touch segments, QBR setting is usually the right place to surface those conversations.
Yeah, for sure.
For sure. Well, finally, let's talk about closing the loop. So using data not just to observe, but to act. So how are you closing the loop with a customer? Can you remember a time when maybe this data helped you step in and turn around like a customer relationship based on feedback?
Yeah. So we get a lot of adoption data. What we do is we bring it all together into our customer success platform, which is Gainsight in our case. So the data feeds into our scorecards. So we have scorecard adoption metrics for license consumption, for monthly and quarterly usage trends, for depth of adoption. All of that is combined into that scorecard. So our CSMs get a really good view on it. And along with that, whenever we see those metrics decline, then they will get an automated call to action in Gainsight to take action, to come up with a remediation plan together with the customer. And it's something that we see that works really well. We're doing renewal reviews like on a quarterly basis. And then we can really see how that evolves as a customer. So a CTA triggered, a customer success manager reaches out to the customer. They start working together on increasing adoption, create a success plan based on what the customer wants to achieve. And actually, it typically ends up being a lot better than it was before. So the customer might have been using quite some functionality before, but maybe it was pretty basic. But because of that interaction, in the end, they are using a lot more advanced functionality, getting more value. And then you see the adoption increase again, and the retention and renewal are secured.
I love that. That is a perfect example of using data and insights for human action. If you were looking ahead, what's one thing that you'd love to automate or operationalize in the future regarding your adoption strategy?
Yeah, I think we discussed linking adoption to value. And for sure, that's the thing we're really focused on now and that we want to bring to an end state. It will probably still take a couple of iterations before all customers are on board with that. But getting that automated digital business review, or maybe even get it into the application itself, as you mentioned, which would be really cool as well, is like the golden nugget we're chasing at the moment.
Definitely, definitely. Well, Jeff, this has been such a valuable conversation. Thank you for sharing so many practical insights and stories. Is there anything else you want to share with our audience before we close?
Yeah, maybe just in summary, there's a couple of things I always keep in mind when working on any process, and especially in adoption. Like one, start from the data. Look at your current retention and what influences it. Second, keep it simple. We've tried very complex things, but the simple things typically work better. And then finally, if something works, continue to improve it, build further on it. You can only make it grow and make it better.
Oh, wonderful. Well, thank you so much again, Jeff. And to our listeners, thank you for tuning in. This was episode 2 of our 4-part series. So stay tuned for more conversations with customer leaders who are rethinking retention from the ground up. Also, feel free to connect with both Jeff and me on LinkedIn. We'd love to keep the conversation going. So until next time, take care.